lot of people would tell me, don't say abortion is murder. Guess what? Abortion is murder.
Planned Parenthood is no more than the devil himself, disguised as an organization meant to help the needy that need medical care.
I want North Carolina to be the most pro-life state in the nation, hands down.
He's a rising star in the Republican Party.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is the new nominee for North Carolina governor for the Republican Party, Mark Robinson. And let me tell you, that's the tip of the iceberg with that guy. There's a lot more. I mean, we could spend an entire show, and we probably will at some point, talk about Mark Robinson. But, you know, it's just the crazy. You know, he says abortion is murder. He says, you know, Hitler's really not the guy that took the guns away. He's kind of questioned the Holocaust. I mean, he called Beyonce a demon. I don't even know where to go with that. The guy is super extreme. But is he unusual? I mean, last night, that we were filming on Wednesday, last night, this is Marjorie Taylor Greene talking to a former BBC reporter who was on site at Mar-a-Lago to talk about what's going on in the Republican Party.
Tell me why so many people that support Donald Trump love conspiracy theories, including yourself. He seems to attract lots of conspiracy theorists.
Well, let me tell you, you're a conspiracy theorist, and the left and the media spreads more conspiracy theories. We like the truth. We like supporting our Constitution, our freedoms, and America first. So,
what about Jewish space lasers? Tell us about Jewish space lasers.
No, why don't you go talk about Jewish space lasers, and really, why don't you fuck off? How about that?
Thanks. Thank you very much.
Yeah, keeping it classy as always. Of course, my favorite part is the reporter going, thanks very much. You know, that's the face of the Republican Party. These are the two stars. These are two stars of the Republican Party today. You know, Mr. Murderer, Beyonce's a demon, Miss, you know, Jewish space lasers. I what about you? I'm not conspiracy theorist. You're conspiracy. It's like a freaking talking to a toddler. I'm actually, my six-year-old grandson's a much more engaging conversation than Marjorie Taylor Greene. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. The whole party's lost their minds. And I can't tell you how much this clip lives in my brain on a regular basis.
So here's this guy coming down the escalator, a rich guy, married three times, pretty foul mouth. What was it and what is it about him?
Has he made mistakes? Oh my goodness, yes. But I do believe that his heart's in the right place for me. How many presidents, how many politicians have come out on stage and hugged the American flag? That really means something to me.
That's real. That's a voter, a Republican voter, saying the reason he likes Trump is because he hugs the flag. Nobody ever does that. See Trump's face? That's the crazy of the Republican Party right now. And I got to tell you, I got the perfect guest to talk about because, believe it or not, she's still a member of that party. So let's get on with this great show. Oh, man. Welcome to On Democracy with F.P. Wellman. I am still F.P. Wellman. Fred Wellman, your host with the most... the most trouble in my life. I don't know what to say, but here we are. Man, I got a great, fun show. This is going to be a fascinating show. And I'm so excited to have my guest. Rena Shah is a friend. That's the best part. D.C.-based political advisor, commentator, social entrepreneur. I'm positive you've seen her on TV. She is a fascinating background. In 2016, she led the very first Never Trump movement inside the Republican Party, becoming the first RNC delegate to speak out against candidate Donald Trump, which you got forced out of the party for, but came back. So she's still one of them. It's great to have you, Rena. Thanks for joining me in the show, finally. We talk every day.
I'm so glad to be here. Yeah. This is like the perfect timing, too.
I know. So, you know, we opened with the crazy. So my guess, my opening is, Rena, what the hell happened to your party? Like, it's like the lunatics who run the asylum at this point. You know, what's your take on the madness that we've seen?
I mean, the books have been written. Yeah. My friend Charlie Sykes has said the right lost its mind. But it's more than that, Fred. We all know it's so much more than that because we've had 8 years of it staring us in the face. And it's like, who are the adults in the room? And of course, it was Biden in 2020. Yeah. And without a doubt, it's still him. But it's almost like, why is all the onus on the left to correct for the craziness on the right? Yeah. And I say that as somebody that made their career in the Republican Party around the time that the Tea Party was coming up, bubbling up. And I could say this easily, safely, that yes, the Tea Party laid the foundation, but they left it. They left it. And so then who came in later? Yeah, the absolute freaking crazy. So I blame guys like Glenn Beck. I blame guys like Eric Erickson. Yep. You know, these are like these conservative stalwarts who are like, if you watch their Twitter feeds now and align them with what they were even a mere 6 years ago, these people are doing a level of mental acrobatics that you're just like, how are you okay? How do you sleep at night? I sleep just fine.
Yeah.
Because I actually never left the party. And by the way, I was vindicated twice when Cheeto Jesus was impeached, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the shamelessness is a superpower, isn't it? It's truly incredible, you know? And, you know, I beat up Joe Walsh a lot for that. You know, it's like, at least
for sure.
I'll give Joe credit. At least he is self-aware and say, yeah, I did that. That was me, you know? You know, but we've gone through the looking glass, and you've got candidates like Mark Robinson now, you've got Carrie Lake. I mean, we've really got the nuts. It's interesting to see, you know, where that goes. So, you know, and now we've got the, you know, and of course the media doesn't know how to deal with this moment. I talk to you a lot because you're in that world. You are a pundit. You go on TV quite a bit.
Yeah.
The New York Times did their thing on Mark Robinson this morning. They had a headline, and the headline was, they called him a fiery outsider eager to dive into the culture war. You know, it's like, this is a guy, if you saw the opening clip where, you know, abortion's murder, he said Beyonce is a demon. He said that all these horrible posts. He said that he actually basically, people say it was anti-Semitic, and it was, but he also said that basically the Weimar Republic, which was centrist, is the ones that took the guns away, not the Nazis. It was like almost like Nazi appeasement. I mean, this guy's now the candidate for governor of North Carolina. Media, do you think the media is up to this moment?
It's a moment in which you have to wonder, who is the media anymore? Like, are they people that just carry the water for big corporations that want eyes and clicks to be able to sell products? At the end of the day, I mean, we had a whole conversation about this, of why is the media failing us over and over? And it's because there's profit there. We're one of the only countries in the world, if not the only one, in which this exists in this way. Like, I've seen this in India a little bit. My family's ancestrally from there on my mom and dad's side. But the comparisons, like, really between 2016 and now, it's almost like, have we learned nothing from, you know, your role in promulgating messaging that was not just dicey, false at times, but let's just call it what it was, right? Lies in many ways. But essentially a threat to the future of a free and fair and just society. And that's, you know, that's me just saying, from putting on an academic hat, but also saying from a purely strategic standpoint, you would think the media would have by now absorbed some level of responsibility for the moment. Yeah, forget that. I mean, I want to say this about myself, though, as a daughter of immigrants from India, and there is the model minority myth, so I also should not kind of push that one out and up. But it's true in some ways, like, you aspire to be in places where people like you are not. You aspire to be successful in what would be a conventional way. American media has been wildly successful to the tune of trillions of dollars.
Yeah.
We aren't even talking billions anymore, man. Like, it's so weird to me that there's this whole ecosystem in which people who were just a journalist yesterday pounding the pavement, asking elected officials answers, are now sitting behind an anchor desk making millions upon millions of dollars, while the people around them are sort of looking at this thing and thinking, what's wrong with this picture? Oh, and then the next day that person's laid off, right? But the situation is so dire. We need to just start speaking in facts and truth. And so for me, when people are like, you're part of the problem, I'm like, I came up in the strategy class at a time where all the dirty work had been done in the GOP. Like, I've come up in almost a part of the political consulting class, which started to pivot towards activism. And for me, that positive activism was my way of affecting change. I'm in a whole family full of doctors, which I frequently say I'm the black sheep. But for me, like, I thought government can be this tool for good. I could do some good in people's lives. And so I went into the strategy class in time. Money was already leaving that industry. And a lot of bad actors were starting to issue mea culpas, being like, I'm so sorry I gave rise to a guy like Trump. Yeah. You know, I don't want to name names here. But then to shift to the punditry class, for example, I only started doing TV a decade ago exactly. And it was great. It gave credibility to my business when I came out and became an operative in 2011. It was good for clients to see me being able to explain complex issues, particularly things that happen on Capitol Hill, because I'm a two-time senior staffer, worked for two Republican members of the House, again, at the time where the Tea Party was coming up, during the height of the financial crisis, during the passage of the Affordable Care Act, which is known as Obamacare. Like, I had seen some pretty significant moments in American legislative history. And so I thought, okay, that's something I can do. I can explain this to the world. And then I entered the punditry class kind of on accident, because I just really like people and I really like explaining these big ideas and distilling them down. And then I'm looking around and I'm like, shit, man, this punditry class is also part of the problem. So like, I've landed up in these places, like at the when there's no payday and when people are again, like, apologizing for their role in tearing down American democracy.
I can't tell you how many, for viewers, how often, you know, so we'll peel the onion back, you know, so Rena and me and Rachel Vindman, a previous guest, as you know, are in a group chat. We call it the group chat. And this is the conversation we have. And I can't tell you how much mea culpa is in the middle of these conversations. Like, well, I did that. You're like, wait a minute, I'm doing this. You know, where I'm, you know, look, I've got the show, right? So we talk about that. Do we want to be part of the anger machine? And you followed my show, you know, and we talked about in the pre-show. I try not to be a part of that anger machine. And it's easy to do. No. I mean, there's so much to be angry about. But if we don't figure out a way for us to come together and work together, and it leads to a question you and I talked about on the way here, which is my girlfriend's mother, who's, I just love her, and she watches the show, so thank you for watching. In her 80s, you know, Florida, you know, they are the she and her lovely husband are just, I love them to death. They treat me like a king. Are normie Republicans. You know, they're old school Reagan Republican. What do you want to call them now? They've been lifetime true conservative, Nebraska, you know, the whole nine yards. And they're struggling. I know she especially is struggling with voting for Trump again. She has told us, and I hope not give a secret away, you know, her friends can't vote for Trump. But they're also struggling for to make that next piece of that puzzle, which is hitting the switch for Biden, right? And I know we spent a lot of time in the Lincoln Project trying to figure out the permission structure for a Republican to go into the booth and do the right thing. I know you did that. And you've expressed discomfort with that at times. I respect that. I disagree. But, I'd love our viewers who are Democrats, and probably a lot of them have, most of them, I should say, have this system that this in their lives where they've had Republicans in their family who are seeing the madness. They're seeing the insanity. What do you think? I mean, as a person who's still hanging in the party, how do we talk to our peers who are on the fence? They see the madness but can't quite make the decision. What keeps them from making that switch?
I got to say, the number one thing you got to let people know is how their lives are going to get worse, right? Because like you and I both know, how else do you mobilize anybody? And we saw Trump do it last night from Mar-a-Lago. You know, that speech he gave, despite it probably being written by the very polished operatives that are now by his side running what is the most professional campaign that he's had in any of his runs for the White House. We know that they chose to mobilize with fear last night. I mean, that was still a very Trumpian speech. What is page one of the Republican playbook these days? Mobilize with fear. It's just the three words that they know work. So they do it every time, but they forget about these normie Republicans. And I've got friends who are like, look, my dad lives in Arkansas and he doesn't want to vote for Trump because he knows that fool is going to pull us out of NATO. Right. You know what I mean? So that's, I'm used to hearing this. And people always assume I became Republican because my parents or because I grew up in Southern West Virginia where I was born. In the southern coal fields and lived there until I was 18. And then at 18, I shifted up north in West Virginia and went to good old West Virginia University where I burned some couches when we won games or when we lost games. Either way, we were burning couches.
I was going to say, it's a thing. Yeah.
It was a thing. I mean, we had some good times in West Virginia when I was growing up because we were pretty purple. And so my parents, my dad actually helped out a libertarian candidate for governor. And I say all this because I have seen what politics could be. I've seen that there is a better, more decent political discourse possible. But like, Fred, nobody seems to want it. Like when we talk on our group chat, which, by the way, was slapped together like so unexpectedly and is the one I'm engaged in, like even when I'm like cooking dinner for my kids, I'm like, shit, I need to put it down.
It's an interesting bunch.
But you know, you guys are friends because what keeps us together, like what binds us, is that we believe in action. We don't believe in just like raging against the machine for the sake of it, but like too many people around us believe in that. And then you talk about this class of normie Republicans who went and clicked for Reagan. And these boomers, you know, where Vietnam was like Hey. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
I'm talking about you, right?
You are. I was a Reagan Republican.
What was your story again? I remember this. You put it in the chat like early on.
Yeah, I was a Reagan Republican. I was a Republican my whole life. Military, strong on defense. I was never social conservative. I was vehemently against the social conservative. Yeah. But I was strong on defense. I am a conservative, a true fiscal conservative in the sense that if I pay taxes, the government should use those taxes effectively for the good of the great nation, not for foolishness. And as I've said often on the show, many of my folks know it, that the party left me, that portion of the party disappeared, right? That sector of our party or my former party, your party, left me behind. In many ways, Biden's much more of strong on defense than the current. I mean, look at Ukraine. Look at Ukraine right now, right? So for me, I found myself homeless. Now, like I said, I was never social. I never cared who you slept with or married. It was never my business. I was always pro-choice, just vehemently pro-choice from my personal experience, my just wonderful people around me who had to go through that. So at some point for me, I hung on as long as I could. Again, oh, by the way, I was a soldier, and that's a very conservative world. I was an officer of the United States Army. Anybody who knows that world, that culture, it's very conservative. But there came a point when I retired from the military where day by day, seeing my children struggle, seeing employees who couldn't get health care because my small business couldn't afford health care for them, how Obamacare Obamacare changed, one of my employees changed her life when she got Obamacare until I could afford it for my company.
Damn.
And so I woke up one day and then Trump came down the freaking aisle. The escalator, you know, when Trump came on the escalator, I was like, no, this can't be real. This can't be a guy. And I tell it often, and I don't know if I told you, but my final straw was not so much that. It was when he said, you know, John McCain's not here because he was captured. And it wasn't so much, and this goes back to our conversation, bringing it back to us, is what got me final straw wasn't so much Trump saying that. That's Trump. The reaction within the Republican Party, within my own veterans community, which was like, you know, and that's when I knew for me, oh, wow, I have no home here, because that's outrageous. Any Republican in history would be done forever. The idea of besmirching those who serve, besmirching those who are captured by the enemy, heroically fought for their survival. So that's when I left.
Died of glioblastoma because... probably due to related to the service. You know, this is just not stuff that's easy to talk about for me, because as a new American, so the daughter of immigrants from India and Africa, you know, I look at the community of veterans like you, and I have nothing but respect, because without your sacrifice, like, this country could not be possible. It could not be this great experiment or concept that my dad taught to me when I was a really young girl. Yeah. He was like, certain things are only possible within these United States. My dad was a polio survivor.
Wow.
So his left leg was shorter than his right leg. And he went on to become a general surgeon and perform these 8-hour surgeries. And in tiny Southern West Virginia, there were these two old school white Harvard boys, good old boys, who gave my dad a chance. And he was like 5'4", dark guy, straight from Africa, by way of India, though I will say he went to med school in India. That's the only time he lived there. So dad was really big on the concept of America, because he's like, a guy like me, in India, they tell me to stay home. Mm. In Africa, they told him to sit behind his dad's shop counter. Mm. And he used to work on little watches and tinker with them. And so I think he became a really great robotic surgeon because people just counted him out. And in America, nobody counted him out. They expected him to run those hospital hallways. He couldn't run them, but he could fast. And they gave him that opportunity. And it gives me goosebumps because we lost my dad 6 years ago next month. But my dad was a big part of like why I feel this way about America. He never was like, go click for an R, go click for a D. He's just like, go click. And you know, so when you talk about that meh feeling, that apathy, like last night's results, and you know, our group chat expresses that, like, we're all a little deflated. Damn, is turnout going to be this depressed in the fall too?
Yep.
And so where do you get these stories but from people who have had personal experiences like you and I? How do we make people care? How do we make people see it our way? And I'm not saying that like we need to take on the cult-like moves, but when Trump says something like, you know, I'm looking at my notes from last night because I was on set for 5 hours, and that was really unexpected with Sky News, which was really fun for me because it's like, shit, I get a chance to break down what the hell is happening here to people on the other side of the pond, and they're curious, and they're deeply, deeply concerned, because they're like, how could this happen again to you guys?
Yeah.
Like, so many of you sounded the alarms. You were invested in denying Trump the White House, and you succeeded in 2020. You didn't think you need to do it again. But when he says stuff like, I told them, don't ever shoot our soldiers again. Like, he repeated that line 2-3 times,
right,
like making himself out to seem like he's the one, the only one who can fix this. You're like, what is wrong with this picture? Oscillating between victimhood and I alone can fix it. Wild.
Yeah,
wild.
And it's just crazy. That's probably a great place to hear from our great sponsor. We've got Roan and a new sponsor, Factors, join us, which, man, I love. Okay, so we'll be right back. Let me tell you guys, eating better has never been easier with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Now look, they're fresh, never frozen, chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and they're ready to go in just 2 minutes. And my God, I love them. I mean, these are really good meals. I've had ready-to-eat meals that taste like the old MREs I ate in the Army. And Factor's anything but. You've got over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, what I love, there's about more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. I ask you, what are you waiting for? I mean, you can get started today after your diet goals, your just healthy goals. And the best part is, it's quick and easy, 2-minute meals that let you fuel up fast. It's restaurant quality. You can get pancakes, smoothies, more, a wide variety of really easy options for an entire day of food. No prep, no mess. Pop a hole in it, you can microwave it, comes out perfect every time. And when you do it, you can pause or reschedule deliveries at any time. Maybe you don't eat them all. Sometimes you're out of town. Factor makes it very easy to manage. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, and I do mean premium options with no cooking required. So all you gotta do is sign up and save. We've done all the math for you, believe me. I'm on a budget just like you are. Factor is less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. I've eaten so many of them. I gave them to my girlfriend. Truly delicious, fresh meals right at your doorstep. So here it is. Just head to factormeals.com/Fred50 and use code Fred50 to get 50% off. That's code Fred50 at factormeals.com/Fred50 to get 50% off. Try it. You will not regret it, I promise. If you're like me, you understand the pain of finding out what to wear each day. I mean, most clothes I have are uncomfortable, never actually the size I really am, and not to mention how much time is wasted trying to find a good outfit. And when you do have a good fit, you can only wear it for a few hours. We have to change for an important meeting or dinner, find a new outfit. Now, everyone wants to dress well at all times because, simply put, it's a confidence booster, even for men like me. Men's closets were due for a radical overhaul and reinvention, and Roan stepped up to the challenge. Roan's commuter collection is the most comfortable, breathable, and flexible set of products known to man, and here's why. Roan helps you get ready for any occasion with the commuter collection, which offers the world's most comfortable pants, dress shirts, quarter zips, and polos. You never have to worry about what to wear when you have the Roan commuter collection. With Gold Fusion anti-odor technology, you'll be smelling fresh and clean all day long, and on top of that, Roan is 100% machine washable, so you can just ditch it all in the dry cleaner, or ditch the dry cleaner completely, put it all in your own washing machine yourself. You know, I'm obsessed with the Roan commuter collection. We're on the move a lot, whether it's I'm catching a flight or I'm going to a meeting or whatever. The Roan commuter collection has never let me down so far. The commuter collection can get you through any workday and straight into whatever comes next. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to head to roan.com/Fred. Use promo code Fred to save 20% off your entire order. That's 20% off your entire order when you head to rhone.com/Fred and use code Fred. It's time for you to find your corner office of comfort. Check out our sponsor, Roan. I hope you'll buy some outfits today. And we're back. So going back into that, since you're on TV last night, one of the big topics last night was the polls. And I got a couple of things here on my screen, you know, so the polls blew it again. We talk about this all the time, right? This is like a regular poor Rachel Vimmon and the polls, you know, but we talked about this, the polls last night, but this one gentleman pointed out by his count, Trump's actual margin in the primaries has underperformed dramatically from the polls. He underperformed by 0 to 5% in Alabama, Iowa, Texas, 6 to 10% in California, Maine, New Hampshire, South Carolina, 10 to 15% underperformance compared to the polls, Massachusetts, Michigan, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Utah, 16 to 20% or 20% or more in Minnesota, Virginia, and Vermont, where he lost. He was supposed to win by 30 points, and he lost by 4. I mean, the only state he outperformed pre-primary polling was North Carolina. And so, I mean, that says a lot about the situation we're in polling wise. And of course, I know you talk about polls a lot, quite a bit. I mean, it just seems like something's fundamentally flawed, isn't it?
For sure, because this is an industry that has benefited from having its reports pushed out and talked about on cable news like daily. What else are people going to talk about in a 24/7 news cycle?
Yeah.
You got to talk, you know, you got to get people outraged about something so that they'll tune in and that they'll feel compelled to follow because they know you're going to feed their outrage. And the feeding and the outrage definitely happens with polls, right? Like this is just conventional wisdom. You don't need to be a political operative. I always say the political consulting industry too, I definitely try to make my parents proud, Fred. Definitely tried. I still am trying out here. Like, my mom is here watching my kids, thank God. So blessed to have her in her 60s. Like, she's just moving and grooving like she probably did in her 20s. Like, she's like, you got 3 kids? I got this. Don't worry. Go do your TV stuff. And like, she's like, you know, what you talk about on TV? I'm like, Mom, I had to talk about another damn poll in which they're putting Trump ahead of Biden. And it's like, I refuse to read these by the day because they're flawed. The methodology is flawed. They don't have a way of reaching people. Look, take this any which way you want and with a grain of salt, if you will, because nobody's God. Nobody can play predictor any better than the next person. But the reality is the news outlets need something to talk about. So they have to push out these polls. And guess who's behind funding these outlets? Again, to a tune that's insane, amount of money that we cannot comprehend, advertising dollars. Who's behind the advertising dollars? Corporations. It's a nasty system, but it's part of capitalism. And a part of me, like, look, maybe this is a separate episode, Fred, like where I could extol the virtues of capitalism. It's definitely helped a lot of families, including mine, like I just explained, like, you know, but then there's also really great stuff like the Americans with Disabilities Act. Like, my dad would credit it every damn day of the week and be like, I remember he just pointed to me one day. He's like, if that rod were not there, I wouldn't go to work. And then me, Rena, would not be sitting here with you today.
Wow.
Like, that is how simple we need to make these arguments to people to understand what the shit is happening around them. And I like realize I'm sounding so frustrated and angry, but like, we shouldn't have to push people to care this much. It should just be obvious and it should be personal to you. And maybe we were better with our communities at some point, but like, I love the little community I've built online with people like you. And I started getting online at a really young age, thanks to my parents. Again, another moment through which capitalism made my life possible. Cause you know, West Virginia public schools weren't that great, but that's why I'm also for stuff like school choice. So in me, you're hearing and seeing a person that is really centrist. Like, I am anti-abortion for myself. If I had an unintended pregnancy tomorrow, I would see it through. But I cannot be anti-abortion for the woman next door to me. I am pro-choice for every single woman around me because we have separation of church and state here. And I'm not an evangelical, but there's nothing wrong with evangelicals. Just don't try to put your religious values on me, because that is not what American democracy is.
And that should be the conservative position, by the way. A conservative position is that, let me do my own thing. Rugged individualism. America was made on our own 2 feet. You know, and that means, and that was how I interpreted as a young man, was it great. You don't want to do it? Then don't do it. You want to have gay marriage? Well, don't marry a gay person. I don't care. You want to talk about their church, then have your church. But unfortunately, we've transitioned to a place where people like Moms for Liberty and others are trying to impose their extreme religious beliefs on all of us. It's beyond a place of personal choice to my personal choice for all of you. And it is a very dangerous place that become part of the conservative movement. Now, having said that, the conservative movement's an interesting place. You know, another thing that came out was that 78% of Virginia primary voters would not commit to voting for Trump in November, Republicans. In California, 69% of Haley voters said they wouldn't vote for Trump. In North Carolina, 81% of Haley voters wouldn't commit to voting for Trump. So those feel like flashing warning signs too, in as exit polls, and we talked about polls, but it is a sign that there is a fracturing occurring that we have to hopefully will. It'll be interesting to see how it goes. Now, as we speak, and again, I always tell my viewer, we record this on Wednesday, so God knows what happens the next 2 days, but you know, Nikki Haley suspended her campaign this morning, didn't endorse. You know, but what's funny about that, and it'll be the next, you know, going back to what you said earlier, Susan Wiles and Lissa Vita running the campaign. Yeah, Trump handled that really professionally. You know, good luck with that. You know, you can have the most professional campaign on earth, but you still have Donald Trump as your candidate.
But also, Fred, you know, he's tolerating them just now. Yeah, like he's only tolerating them so he can win. The minute he gets in, it's back to the Seb Gorkas and all those other con artists, you know, Bannon and company. This is not a fresh set at all.
No,
that set is so nasty and in the muck. And I love how they love to scream out swamp, deep state. Y'all mother effers are part of that, too.
Wiles is 100%. She's lifetime, you know, she's as swamp 100%. As it gets, you know, and, and now she's hang out with Charlie Kirk a lot now. I mean, again, I believe it's a matter. Now, we talk this a lot, and you and I talk about this separately, is, you know, it's easy to say what the Democrats need to do, but our enemy gets a vote, if you will, and Trump's going to be sitting in a criminal trial in 2 weeks. He's never faced something like that. So I think we'll see more. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Do you think that, like, him actually being, he may be convicted, there's a good chance he will. I mean, obviously a good prosecutor doesn't bring a case they can't win. That's a New York State case. It's complicated. Do you think that'll change minds and hearts and minds, or what should we, I mean, it's going to make him crazy, right?
For sure. I mean, I think he's already a little bit crazy in in his heart of hearts, right? You know, he didn't sleep well last night.
Well, he looked terrible last night.
Fancy ass speech.
Didn't he look terrible?
I think he looks terrible any day of the week. So I'm not the best person to ask about that.
There's that.
I think he's one of the ugliest humans I've ever seen because his insides are so ugly, right? Like, you know, he started with mocking a disabled reporter. Like, how depraved are you to start your campaign with that stuff, man? Like, this is what I'm talking about, is when we allow this fool to take the podium and act like an adult for once at age 78, I believe he is now, 77, 78. This is a situation in which you got to wonder, okay, why did all the rational thinking people, where are they at? They're leaving. Like the Senate, for example, they're leaving in droves. And say what you want about cinema. Hey, man, at least she's going out. People call her a witch all day long. But, you know, she's doing what I think is a principled thing to do in a way. I can see the sliver of principle there. Did she know she'd get her ass handed to her? Probably.
Oh, yeah. Agree to disagree. Just be honest. Yeah, I mean, she spent all her money running marathons and doing wine internships. But, you know, she's leaving. But Mitch McConnell's out. And I saw you discuss this the other day on our show about how after Mitch announced, it was right after he said in his speech that the Ukraine bill was sort of a final straw, almost like a final straw in a lot of ways, the timing of it all. I mean, these guys are walking. And he, of course, having said that, he endorsed Trump this morning, right? So, you know, it's just, it's madness. It's
Mitch, little bitch. I mean, seriously, going out like this in the twilight of your life.
Subtle. It's very subtle, Rena. You can't say that on Sky News, can you? Hell no. You can't remind us
that
stuff.
I can't do that anyway. I think I'm a little too fired up today.
Nah, it's great.
And look, here I come with my millennial coping mechanism, my Stanley Cup.
Very nice. Very classy. There you go.
But you know, I gotta say, I'm so disappointed because he knows better.
Yeah.
He knows there's still some love for him in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And every time he went home in the past few years, he was met with a crowd and then he froze up a couple times, you know. So it's definitely problematic for him back home. And I think that factored into his decision to leave or announce that he's leaving, which he still hasn't done. I'm just like, why do people give these like teases and then just say, I'm leaving on this future date?
Yeah.
Like, just get out already.
He's not up for election. You know, so it's...
Yeah, you know, we get it. We get what you're trying to do. You're trying to rally support behind what you think is the right thing for the party. But what he knows in his heart of hearts is that he's part of the problem. And by telling Kentuckians to click for Trump again, those who are on the fence, and I don't know that there are that many Kentuckians on the fence, but there is some empirical evidence to show us that maybe there are, actually. I didn't bring the numbers today, but Andy Beshear, man, you got people out in blue places that turn red, or red places that turn blue for Beshear.
Right.
So what are we dealing with here? We're dealing with a juggernaut when we talk about kind of like what the forces are that are going to bring people out for this next less than 250 days we got.
Yeah.
Are people going to go to the streets? Are they going to riot? Are they going to march? Are they going to, you know, what I'm really trying to say here, are they even going to care by the time November comes around?
Yeah.
Like, we just haven't had a moment, right? We had the Black Lives Matter protests and of course, what a lot of people on the right call riots. Yeah. And yes, there were bad actors who rioted, of course. And prior to that, when Trump was elected for the first time, you know, we had the Women's March. Yeah, the pink hat brigade, whatever you want to call them. I mean, I think people in the streets is always healthy, and I just don't know. So this sleeping giant mm-hmm. is there. I guess that's a better term, but it is a juggernaut the minute it becomes activated.
Yeah.
And that giant is what's going to put the next occupant of the White House there.
Yeah.
But until we figure out how to activate that giant, like, people are going to be sitting on the sidelines. That's just so bad for democracy.
Yeah.
So bad.
I hope you're right. And on that note, I think probably the final topic I want to talk to you about is, you know, you've been in Republican politics at the staffer level and everything else for quite a while. You remember when Heritage did their annual presidential blueprint, right? And in our past, it was literally a blueprint. It wasn't even that many pages, a couple hundred pages of policy proposals and stuff they do. But this year we've got Project 2025, you know, 85 far right groups, a roadmap essentially to take over the United States government at every level of it in very extreme ways. Parts of it are being, even though they've published a 1,000 page guide, there's still parts they admit are secret to it, invoking the Insurrection Act on day one, Schedule F to change, or recruiting 30 to 50,000 people to come in and take over the government at every level. It's kind of chilling in a lot of ways. I mean, you've seen that arc. What's happened there? How scary is this to you as someone who's watched the arc of the conservative movement?
It's so anti-American. I can't even begin to describe, right? Like, right. It is just not what a country like ours stands for. It's not what a country like ours allows. And that's why I say, when I want to see people in the street, I want to see people in the street so angry about the way of life about to change under a few people. Because it's a few people who put this together, right? Because they saw from 2020 that they didn't get their way in some ways. So guess what? A lot of people are not paying attention. So we're going to try to sneak this kind of shit through. This is not high-minded. There's nothing intellectual about it. A lot of these think tanks in this town in D.C. exist to do exactly this kind of stuff. So not only are they peddling influence, they are doing the work of those who want to change the system so it can't be fucked with again. And I hate to use that word because I'm a mom, okay? Like, I better have a cleaner mouth than this. But, you know, the reality is when you talk about what happened in the aftermath of January 6th, however you talk about it, you know that the guardrails were there. Whatever the founders built in worked. But what I've seen over the course of the past year, and this is something you and I and Rachel always get a little get frustrated about, if anything, right? Because we're all pretty optimistic and we're all action oriented. The three of us friends, I can speak for us in our group chat. But the one part in the group chat that always gets like a little, what I call it? I mean, what's the word I'm even looking for? Like, it's a little choked up, and where we kind of like leave the question mark is again, a moment in which you're just wondering, how do you wake people up to this?
Yeah.
Is it too late? Yeah. Like, is it two steps too far to get them to even understand what's happening behind their back?
Yeah.
This is your system. You need to show up. You need to unrig it. You need to figure out what's going on around you in order to even show up to unrig it. And so I did the work because guess what? I never left the Republican Party because I want to stick it to the man being Donald Trump. He came in, hijacked the party. He was not a lifelong registered Republican. He didn't understand the values of Lincoln. You know, of course, the man has nothing in common with Abe, right? Like, this is a party which has been remade in the image of a man. just a man
yep.
who stands for nothing but himself and enriching his own family. And that's why you saw his family back out there at Mar-a-Lago last night, because they see evidence that they can enter again, enrich themselves, get themselves out of a world of trouble, the financial trouble, especially they're in New York. And then they can do it all with a few operators who know just how to do the system in order to make it benefit a few. So that's what's on the line here, Fred. And that's what we got to say every damn day of the week to our friends. Because if you don't show up and you don't care, then guess what? Be prepared to get fucked with. Then don't complain. Then don't complain to me when they're toting you off to jail for showing your ass or whatever you want to do. Because it's freedom, right? Like, I'm talking to all my girlies who have OnlyFans accounts right now. If you want that freedom, you need to keep going and yeah. getting out there to the ballot box and yeah. voting for people that aren't going to trounce on your personal freedoms. Because, like, at the end of the day, that's what I thought the Republican Party was about. I don't want the government in my bedroom, my backyard, or my bank account. Yep. And so I stay in the party as a reformer. Yeah, call me a rhino all you want. Like, I mean, the favorite tweet is always when they change like R-I-N-A to R-I-N-O. I'm like, oh, wow,
right there.
So clever.
It's right there.
So clever, you know? But that's what's up, my friend. And,
I love it.
I
think
really
it's a great place to finish up. Don't lose your OnlyFans. I mean, that was my big plan to make money. I was just going to, you know, sit in shorts and talk about politics. But nobody wants to see that. Nobody wants to see a grandpa. just forget
nobody
that. It's not happening.
Nobody wants to see me do that,
nobody
by the way.
See that,
come
you know?
On now. That's
and on that note... Rena, thanks for joining me finally. It shouldn't have been this long. I appreciate everything you do, and you know, keep up the fight. You know, honestly, we are you're right. I mean, that's what I tell my here. You nailed it with my friend and with our viewers and everything else is like, look, it's in your hands. And I get messages every day. What can I do? What can you can postcard, you can volunteer with a campaign, you can knock doors, you can it's not just money. You don't have to have money. You can canvass in your neighborhood. You can volunteer for a school board race. School board's where the fight is. That's right in your neighborhood, man. And
yeah.
And so there is a way for you to win your democracy back, but it doesn't involve just sitting on your computer sending.
No. So it's I mean, Fred, you've been so generous. Thank you. And I wouldn't be me if I didn't come through with a little dose of reality. It's as simple as like telling 10 friends,
yeah.
come with me. Let's go together. Yeah. Are you doing it? Are you voting today? And who are you voting for? What are you voting for? Because I did this in the last midterms. I stood in my polling place. I waited for those 10 friends to come and I got them to vote yes on Amendment 1, which was an important amendment in Virginia at that point, which was to establishing an independent redistricting commission.
Yeah.
So this wasn't just 2 years ago. This was a few years ago. Yeah. And guess what? Some of my friends showed up that day. They had no clue that was on the ballot. They didn't know what an independent redistricting commission was, but you better bet that they heard me and they voted that way. And it made the difference.
I love it. And where can people find you, Rena?
Rena in DC, everywhere. I guess I could be.
That's
I don't know.
Easy. That's it. There you go. Well, thank you so much, sister. Appreciate you. I'll probably talk to you in 15 minutes. And we'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you so much. Continue fighting.
I'm on it. Bye now. What a great conversation. I love having actual friends. I mean, I tell you, my format of my show is try to have you guys hang out with two friends with me. And I love having friends on because they're my friends. I'm very, you can't believe how awesome I've had the best last 4 or 5 years have been so cool. And as my partner often says, she goes, man, you have a weird life. It's like, and it does. I have the weirdest life. The people I get to talk to. And I honestly, there's times I'm as astounded as you are, you know? So thank you so much for Rena joining me, my friend Rena. And I'm sure we'll be texting her in a minute. I wanted to close out with a quick thing. So one of the things that came out last night in Super Tuesday that's been getting a lot of play on the Democratic circles is Adam Schiff winning the Senate, making his way to the Senate general election in California. Along with Steve Garvey, the Republican, there's been a ton of criticism of Adam Schiff's strategy. So I want to go into that because this is me putting my political consultant hat on. Okay, so I had to clarify some things. So the argument is that Congressman Schiff targeted Steve Garvey and quote elevated Steve Garvey, the Republican, over his Democratic opponents, Katie Porter and others. And because of that, he elevated the Republican in a very crass and underhanded way to win the election. And I get why people would say that. But you have to understand the point everyone is missing that is so important is that California is a jungle primary. And what that means is everyone runs. and the top two vote getters move on to the general election. And what that often means, as it does in Louisiana and other places that have jungle primaries, is first of all, during the primary session, you really can't endorse one candidate, you know, because you don't know. But then you have a problem where you end up in a state that's fairly liberal, let's be honest, like California, you end up with multiple Democrats or two Democrats running against each other and eating each other alive till the general election. What Schiff did was a very smart jungle primary strategy. Very smart. He picked out his best possible Republican opponent, and that could be the worst opponent, depending where you sit, obviously, but the most likely Republican opponent, and picked as him as his main opponent in this jungle primary, almost ignoring his other Democrat competitors. That's the nature of a jungle primary. Look at a normal primary like Virginia, where there's, I think there's 10 people running for Virginia 7 right now. That's a real primary. They have to come out with the best Democrat in May or June to move forward to the general election. There's a real primary. Here in Missouri, it's the same way. But in California, it's not that way. And so what Adam Schiff did by targeting a Republican, because let's be honest, you watch, look, so let's talk about if he hadn't done it that way, if he had fought with Katie Porter, if Katie Porter, who lost by a lot, by the way, if she had been number two, it would have been Katie Porter and Adam Schiff spending the next 8 months to the election eating each other alive, spending millions of dollars to take each other out. Two of our best Republican superstars eating each other alive for one Senate seat. That's what the future would have held if Adam Schiff hadn't chosen a strategy of highlighting and targeting a Republican as opposed to a fellow Democrat. When you flip the script, you realize this was actually the noble move to do for the good of the party and the good of the race. And we can argue all day about, oh, politics is dirty. It's like, yeah, well, welcome to my world. I don't want to tell you folks, but this is where we're at. And I will take a general election of a Republican versus a Democrat any day over inter-party fights or the choice. What if it was two? Would you guys be as mad if it was two Republicans that end up on top? And it's just going to be, we don't even have a choice. Nobody has a choice now. This is a good thing. I think overall it's a good thing. In a state where he's most likely to win, he's almost guaranteed to be a senator now. So criticize the system. I get it. I do. But understand the system before you criticize it. That's all I'm asking. But as a political operative and a person who's run a Senate campaign or been a senior advisor for a Senate campaign in Louisiana last cycle, which is a jungle primary state, it was very, very, very hard to run because you can't attack your fellow Dems. It's inappropriate. But you kind of have to. It's jungle primaries are good for the democracy and also bad. Okay. So having said that, congratulations to Adam Schiff. He's a great choice. He'll be a great senator. I'm heartbroken we lost good members of Congress who had to drop out of their congressional races to run for Senate. But I guarantee they all have very, very bright futures in the electoral politics. Or even, God, imagine Katie Porter as a judge. I mean, I would not want to fake Katie Porter across you know, in a court. So having said that, well, as you know, like I said, Super Tuesday is behind us. By the time you see this show, the State of the Union will have been run. It's an exciting time. We're now in the depth of the general election. I'd love you to join Forgotten Democrats now that we're into it. As you know, I'm the national chairman of Forgotten Democrats. We're ramping up our efforts as we start picking these Democratic nominees for these races. We'll be helping the ones who have the least money first is our goal. It is our first cycle, so we're still getting our feet under us. It'd be great to join us. We're having a town hall in 2 weeks with Martin Kuz, who is a reporter in Ukraine, like my friend Tim Mack. We're going to talk about the impact of our dysfunctional Congress on the importance of the national reputation. In a town hall, you can ask us questions. That's in 2 weeks. The best way to find out about it is get on our email list. It's just texting Fred to 33777. That's Fred to 33777. I'd love you to just join. Go to ForgottenDemocrats.org. That's ForgottenDemocrats.org. And you can sign up there. It's a small monthly donation. And you can be part of our movement. And I appreciate it. As always, find us here in the Midas Touch. Find us on YouTube on the On Democracy podcast channel. We'd love you to subscribe to that too. It's free as well. I'd love to get some of you guys come over there. So we're doing some fun stuff with some shorts and some clips and some other interesting stuff on there. As always, you can find me. I'm still on X, Twitter as FP Wellman, Threads, Instagram, Meta, when they're working, FP Wellman official. In the meantime, as you heard from our show tonight, it's up to us. It's up to you. Saving our democracy isn't going to be a thing where you can do where you sit it out. It's a participatory democracy. It's a republic if you can keep it. All right. get in the fight, stick with us. Thank you for joining us every week right here on Our Democracy.